Welcome to the Principled Podcast, brought to you by LRN. The Principled Podcast brings together the collective wisdom on ethics, business and compliance, transformative stories of leadership, and inspiring workplace culture. Listen in to discover valuable strategies from our community of business leaders and workplace changemakers.
Hello, and welcome again to another edition of LRN's Principled Podcast. My name is Ben DiPietro. I'm the editor of LRN's ENC Pulse newsletter. We have a special COVID-19 edition today, and with us is David Greenberg, currently leading the Office of CEO at LRN. He also serves as chair of the Governance and Risk Assessment Committee and a member of the Audit Committee of International Seaways, one of the largest global crude oil and petroleum tanker companies, and currently serves as managing director of Cortina Partners, a private equity firm. Welcome, David. We really appreciate you taking time with us today.
Great to be here, Ben.
You've also served in so many different roles. Previous to that, you were a chief compliance officer among them. And so we're going to tap into your knowledge about how to handle this particular strange time that we're in right now from all these different perspectives that you've served in. But let's start here before we get to that. When we all look back at this COVID-19 pandemic and evaluate what will be the difference between companies that managed this crisis well and those that didn't?
Well, the first thing to say is that everything in this crisis has a context. Obviously, the airline and hospitality industries didn't bring this disaster on themselves. And on the other hand, grocers or respirator manufacturers aren't benefiting from their capabilities or efforts. There's just plain bad luck involved and a little bit of good luck. But looking at two companies in one industry, say, the one that manages well is more likely to have a strong sense of purpose that aligns all of its people and a set of core sustainable values that people can use as a basis for decisions and actions when they're confronted by what is admittedly a unique and totally unanticipated situation.
So then how can having an ethical framework in place help organizations as they navigate their way through the issues related to COVID-19 to the business, their employees, to customers, and public at large?
The virus is confronting us with so many unknowns and no straightforward answers, only a bunch of really unhappy trade-offs. A strong ethical framework in that context gives an organization a sense of what's the right thing to do, and it gives it a methodology for making decisions. It also tends to help people navigate uncertainty and grayness. So when I think about LRN's own set of values, and humility comes to mind as I talk to the team and say, I'm pretty sure I don't have all of this right. We better keep talking. Or when I think of the LRN leadership framework that says, we just have to be rigorous about the truth of the present. And I think we have no idea how quickly or badly this can be. So it's okay to be frightened, and it's also necessary to do some worst case scenario planning.
You serve out here as CEO at LRN, you're a board member, and you've previously worked as Chief Ethics and Compliance Officer at Altria. Walk us through what each of these people in those roles are feeling now and what they should maybe be focused on. We'll start with the CEO. As a leader here at LRN, what are your main concerns? How are you managing your time and putting priorities on things? And should you serve as the public face and voice, or should someone else do that? How do you set the tone to be calm and instill faith in employees and stakeholders as we all move forward through this?
Well, Ben, we're talking about what feels like a once in 50 years kind of threat. The word existential is overused, but it feels like it might apply here. So as someone who's been in all three roles and now is in two of them, leading a company and serving on a public company board, it's important to say I don't take off the hat that says human being and put on one that says CEO. So first, no matter what the role, my primary concern is for the people in the company and their families. Then I look from the point of view of the role to see how I translate that into priorities, actions, and messages. And the second point here is that an existential threat is, by definition, a very deep and basic threat. So what are the deep and basic underpinnings of a company that can be mobilized to stand up to such a threat? Another way of asking that question is, when the chips are down, and today they are decidedly down, what makes a company worth preserving? Does it understand its basic purpose in the world and the values it stands for? And can it mobilize that purpose and values to inspire all stakeholders and galvanize the right kind of action? So when I turn to the role of CEO, the best metaphor I have for how I feel now is a parental one. Our employees are like family, and I feel a duty to protect them, help them, inspire them, and generally look out for their well-being. Nothing good happens at a company if the people are in a bad place, if they can't take care of their own families and allow themselves to focus the way they want to on their work. The days are gone when CEOs feel all powerful. They're just so dependent on the team around them and outward to the very grassroots of the company. So people are job one. What do they need to hear from leadership to feel supported and secure? What do we as a company need to do to make that message come alive? If I can find the words and action to keep the faith of employees, they'll come together to do all the right things to sustain the company through the crisis. Not unlike a good parent who sets a strong foundation from which the children can grow and thrive. Of course, it takes adapting strategies and tactics to whatever the realities the marketplace confronts the company with. And a good CEO will know the right ways to pose the questions. How's our context changed and why? What about our strategy needs to be modified? Can we execute these changes quickly and effectively? But in the end, it's dozens, hundreds, even thousands of people who make that happen, not the CEO.
From the board perspective then, what should directors be working on as it relates to COVID-19 at this moment? How do they assess where to place priority and resources? How does the board strike that balance between being human in this moment and yet keeping its eye on business operations and making sure that there's some continuity?
So, as a director of a company, I'm painfully aware that boards are composed of people, as are the companies. So my first thought about the International Seaways response to this crisis was, how's Lois, our CEO, bearing up? How's the rest of the senior team? How are our crews on 50 huge oil tankers on the seas around the world? And are our tankers like the cruise ships we hear about in the news? Are they facing the same threats those cruise ships are encountering? But when I put on director hat, chair of governance committee hat, member of audit committee hat, I'm thinking, how do I support our CEO and leadership team? What are the changes to our context and environment unleashed by this virus? Have we ever planned for anything like this? What's the team drawing on from scenario planning, crisis simulations, and the like? And as the magnitude of the pandemic comes into focus, which for us means crashing oil prices, a Saudi decision to flood the market with oil, and tanker rates skyrocketing, at least in the very short term, how's all that affect our 2020 plan? How's it affect our loan covenants? Should I, as chair of the Governance and Risk Assessment Committee, have anticipated something like this? I have to say that for this crisis, being tossed around by stormy seas feels about right as a metaphor. And one thing you have to know, boards are in a better condition to handle something like this when they have great communication, trust, a culture of openness, a willingness to challenge conventional wisdom. And those things cannot be built in the midst of a crisis. It is way too late by then.
So it's interesting because how do you go through and know if the scenarios you're planning for are not strong enough or too weak? How do you make that is that a lot just of technology now, and it's what the algorithm tells you it's going to be based on all the scenarios that go in? Or when you guys do some of that planning, if you can open that up a little bit, I think that'd be interesting for people to hear.
One of the wonderful and entertaining and also horrifying things about being a director is looking at risk. When you read a 10Q or a 10K and you come to the risk section, you almost despair and say, I'm not sure anyone would ever want to invest in this company or any company when they read all of the risks that are laid out there. So, no, I mean, risk is very much about human judgment and about what could happen and about what's happened in the past. And I very much believe that scenario planning and risk assessment will be changed by this crisis. I bet that there are very few companies that have ever looked at something like this. And so the whole process of board governance is likely to be changed forever by what we're going through right now.
So people were just basically underestimating in their worst case scenarios what these could be, and that will change how they look at everything that way? Is that the way you're thinking it's going to change?
I mean, I think that when you look at the way the world has responded to this, much less company boards of directors, I think the world underappreciated the risk and the magnitude of something like this. And, you know, let's hope we all learn from it. But it's just a fact of life that sometimes the risk that you most have to confront is the one you've least prepared for. So I think this will improve our thinking about risk and what can happen. But when you look at risks from 9/11 through now, these were just not planned for.
Let's take a look at this from the CECO perspective then. What should they be working on these last couple of weeks? How can they best serve the company and their colleagues? How do they decide when to bring forth training and messaging to address the realities of working from home, the cybersecurity issues that come with that, and making sure people continue to do the right things and are being healthy and staying as, you know, sane as they can in their own little self-contained worlds? And what types of messages would work best now?
When I put the chief compliance and ethics officer hat back on now, it's kind of like a coach hat. And the questions that come to mind to me are, how do I organize to help the company do the right thing? What plays can I run in the coach metaphor to influence behavior in the right direction? Chief compliance officers have to have their eyes on risk on the one hand, which can feel very immediate and sure does here, and culture on the other hand, which feels less immediate and more long-term, but as most chief compliance officers would tell you, is far more impactful. So both come into play here with the virus. What new risks come from having everyone work from home, and what resources can help mitigate those risks? The fact that so many ethics and compliance resources are online and can be digitized and accessed from home, that's an advantage. Think about online training. Think about codes of conduct online. Think about communications that reside on your computer and in your phone. The chief compliance officer has a wealth of tools at his or her command that they should be taking full advantage of right now. And working from home also strains corporate culture. Colleagues can't see each other in the halls to work out disagreements that come from struggling with what's a scary problem. Managers have less control when people are at home, particularly if they tend to manage autocratically. Lines of communication are more complicated with people dispersed. It may be harder to figure out, for example, how to report some misconduct. But there's also an opportunity for chief ethics and compliance officers to take what they've learned about their culture to pinpoint likely trouble spots that have been revealed through things like culture assessments, through missed questions on online training, through recent helpline reports and the like, to allow the chief compliance officer to mobilize resources that are available right at employees' fingertips at home on topics like cybersecurity, respectful communications, anti-discrimination and harassment, supply chain security, or third-party compliance, all the things that are impacted by people being at home, people being dispersed, and lines of communication kind of being attenuated.
It's sad we need moments like this to serve as reminders, but what advantages do organizations that have spent time and effort building cultures based on trust, truth, transparency, have in meeting the challenges of something as unknown and potentially devastating as it appears to be as COVID-19, compared to those that didn't spend so much time on building a robust workplace?
Companies that are aligned by the values you just listed have the ability to act more decisively, the ability to be more resilient, the ability to generate more loyalty from employees, from customers, from communities, from shareholders. So in times of trouble, and we're in one now, these sustainable values are powerful tools for both survival in the moment and thriving in the long term. And let me say this. We often laugh about the phrase, hope is not a strategy, particularly in the corporate context. But I think in this case, hope is a very powerful strategy. It's hope that is going to help get us all through this, because for every person and every company out there, there are things that are in our control and things that are out of our control. And I think hope is one of the things that allows us to focus on and do the things that we can control and let go of the things that we can't control. So I really do think that if companies can lead from their heart during this time, they are more likely to find their way through. I think it would be wrong not to end today without a message to any LRN partners who may be listening to this. And I want to say just this. We want to be there for you and here for you as your partner. Our team is just a phone call or an email away, and we are really anxious to help in any way we can. We know you may have much bigger priorities than what we may be thinking about from an ethics and compliance perspective, but know that your ethics and compliance initiatives and efforts is our number one priority, and do not be afraid to call on us. We may not have all the answers, and you shouldn't feel that you have all the answers. That's why we always talk in terms of a partnership. So anything we can do for you as business partners and as people, we want to be there for you.
And on that, I'll just thank you for taking some time to share all that knowledge that you've accumulated in your great career. And we really appreciate it. And good luck to all of us going forward.
Thanks, Ben.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. The Principled Podcast is brought to you by LRN. At LRN, our mission is to inspire principled performance in global organizations by helping them foster winning, ethical cultures rooted in sustainable values. Please visit us at LRN.com to learn more. And if you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to leave us a review.